You don't have to wait for your finances to be in order to play tennis and get a dog.
Hi, my name's Alyssa.
And my name is Bridget.
And you're listening to Money Feels,
the podcast where we welcome you into 2024 with casual, happy money conversation.
Yeah, and a little welcome back. I'm so glad you had a tagline because I forgot we do taglines. It's been so long.
It has been a long time. I'm super excited to be back for season 5.
I know. Like, how did we get here? I forgot. I thought we were still on season 4.
I think I said in season 4, like, thanks for listening to season 3. And you're like, no.
Well, I feel like we actually took a full break from work.
Mm-hmm.
So we can both pat ourselves on the back.
I feel like I was still super busy in December. I didn't work very much, but I did train my dog, which is just a different kind of work.
Yeah, I guess some people might not know you have a dog now.
I'm still confused when I wake up. And I'm like, why is there a dog in my house? Because it was not my intention to get a dog. I don't really identify as a dog person. I grew up with dogs, but I never planned on owning one. And now I've had one for more than a month.
I was completely stunned when that happened.
I just like spontaneous, life-changing decisions. One time, I had an accidental baby. Now I have an accidental puppy. I'm just going with the flow. I just take what the universe throws out at me and I roll with it. And I'm happier. It enriches my life.
I think that's a good mantra for 2024.
Yes.
Take what the universe throws at you.
Especially puppies.
If the universe is throwing puppies at you, you're doing great. That's a sign that everything is good. Well, I feel like we have to ask, how does your money feel today?
It feels pretty good. It's definitely in a state of flux, namely because of the puppy. I had no idea how expensive dogs were. I think we'll have to do a whole episode on pet expenses because dogs are much different than cats. And also, my mortgage is actually up for renewal next month.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was self-employed when I got my house, my lender, I could only get a 2-year fix. That was the best option at the time. And of course, I knew that I would be renewing at a higher rate. I'm still sad at the rate that it will be next month. I'm expecting my mortgage payments, I think, to go up by $800 a month. It's so much, but I've kind of shifted things around. Like, my car is totally paid off, so I don't have a car payment. My daughter's not in daycare, so that bill's gone. So I've kind of trimmed some things and the money's there, but it's going to be a bummer to see.
Yeah, because the value of your home doesn't go up as fast as that bill does.
Oh, it went down when I check it on Honest Door. Because live in Edmonton. So it's not a lot, but it's down like $2,000 since I bought it. But yeah, it's going to cost me another $2,000 a month. Maybe no, $1,000 a month.
I know. I feel like it's overwhelming. My renewal will be in July and I'm already panicking about it.
Have you looked at what the rates are? Do you have an idea yet? I guess that's still 7 months away. So you maybe
we reached out to our broker, but we can't really do much yet. So
yeah. I mean, at least I think rates are kind of going to hover where they are. So it's probably not going to get worse.
Yeah. It can only go down from here, right?
I wouldn't say that. But I would say it cannot go up as much as quickly as it was. I mean, down is a more likely where it is the most likely
it'll
position.
Just stay.
Yeah, it'll stay for a bit with maybe minor fluctuations. But yeah, this is the reality we have to operate in. And it does suck for homeowners, which is most Canadians, a lot of Canadians. So we all have to bear this together.
I know. I think my money feels weird right now.
Weird.
Weird. Well, I'm just in a very big period of change in my life.
I know, it's so exciting.
It's exciting. It's scary. I have no idea what to expect.
That's so fun, though.
It is fun, but I had a really hard time planning for the year ahead. I am still struggling to know if what I put in my year compass is even what I want.
Oh, interesting.
So anyways, it's good because I'm doing a no spend month on non-essentials.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people don't like, and a lot of people think it's damaging to do.
But do you mean like they don't like that you're doing it and they've let you know this?
No. I think a lot of like people just don't like the idea of a no spend month because it's restrictive.
Yeah, I don't know. Especially in a month like January, it feels like such a healthy reset. Sometimes like I'm not on a no spend month, but I ate so much sugar over Christmas and it wrecked my skin. So I've had to like cut down on the sugar and up the broccoli because that's the only way that my acne goes away. And like, I kind of think of a no spend month like that. You're just cutting out some spending instead of sugar, but it's a healthy reset to get back to your baseline and then you can put
exactly
it back.
I have a spending hangover after November and December because I'm always buying so much for other people and myself. Like I just slip in little purchases here and there when I'm buying for other people. So it's nice to reset. I'm glad I can finally address some of the spending that I was doing without realizing. Like I think I was unintentionally spending money that I didn't need to spend.
Yes, I think that's so much of it is sometimes you just need to refocus on intentional spending because we are so swayed by impulse purchases everywhere that you kind of forget to stop and think before you spend money. When you're doing this no spend month of non-essentials, are you like treating yourself in any way, like using gift cards? You know how Deidre does from OU Budget and her no spend month, she still like goes to the spa and Starbucks because she has all these gift cards. Have you hacked it like that?
So I am trying. I actually in November found out that I have like 30 plus gift cards. I was hoarding them.
Oh my God. You're a gift card hoarder.
I don't like receiving gift cards, but I get them so much. So I'm trying to use them. And okay. I was like, oh, I'll use them during this no spend month, like Deidre does. But I took one to the movie theater and it was empty. So now
And you used all Nick's scene points to pay for your popcorn.
But it was still free. So like you can use your rewards points. You can use
free
gift
for
cards.
You. Poor Nick. No scene points left.
He approved the expenses. Okay. But yeah, I'm trying to use them. I feel like I'm also not going to stress if I spend money one day on a non-essential. It's more just like being more conscious and holding yourself accountable. Mm-hmm. So I don't like, it's not a pass fail situation. It's a reflective period for me.
And I love that.
I think that's how everyone should view a no spend month. Like you're not going to berate yourself if you accidentally bought a coffee because you were having a bad day. You know, that's not fair and that's not realistic, but at least you can cue into like, why did you buy the coffee? And is this a regular habit? And see if you want to continue forward with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because even now I feel like the biggest culprit isn't even coffee. It's like those mindless Amazon purchases or things you order from Instagram. Like I just opened my mailbox and there's two packages in it. And I'm like, did I order something? Like, I don't even know.
Oh, no. Well, I saw that on your ins for 2024. I love that you did the in and out. One of them was spending, like tracking your spend.
Yes.
As in.
I've gone back to tracking spending because I didn't last year. I would here and there and then it all fell apart. But then when I had to send all my company's financials to my accountant, I was horrified by the amount that I took out of my company and spent. Like granted, I still saved and invested a lot and I had some major purchases like my patio reno, but I still was like, I don't know if that was really necessary. I don't feel bad about it. I think it was good because it's kind of fun to have a year of your life where you're like, what does it feel like if I just bought everything I wanted all the time? And now I know what that feels like. And it was good, but I don't think I need to do that every year. I think we can be also more intentional with my spending. So that's what I'm doing now.
I feel like that's a dream. I feel like I mostly did that last year. Mm-hmm. But I was like doing a reflection at the end of every single month. But I did my spending wrapped. And yeah. I also was horrified at some of the spending decisions.
It seems so little as you're going through the year. And then when you add it up at the end, you're like, what? Like, I couldn't do a spending wrap. I wish I could, but I hadn't tracked everything. Mm-hmm. The only things I can track is like Sephora, because those receipts are in the app. and that's also like, there's some I don't want to add up. I'm like, I don't want to know. Like, because I know already, like I'm a Sephora Rouge. So that means I spend over $1,000 a year at Sephora. I always get invited to the Ritzia clientele. So I'm like, oh no, that means $1,000 more at Aritzia. And I'm like, these aren't good. I don't want to know. So this year we're cutting back on those things.
Okay. I'm holding you to this. I want to see your spending wrapped at the end of 2024. Oh,
no.
Come on. It's just a small commitment.
I can only show you. I don't want to show like the internet.
Okay. Just for me. Just you can give sneak peeks here and there. I didn't share everything.
Okay.
I think like the most important reason to do it, honestly, is for your fixed expenses, because it gives you the averages for what you spend. And then the next year, you know, if things did increase, like my groceries did increase by 9%, which was perfectly in line with inflation.
Oh my gosh.
So I know now what I'll be spending on groceries every single month for 2024, which I think is really helpful.
Yeah, it is helpful for planning. But I think there was probably just a lot of waste in my spending last year. And by waste, I don't mean, like, I just mean money that I don't think necessarily had an emotional ROI that was worth it. Like, there was quite a bit of leakage, and I had a problem, I know, and this is one of the reasons I want to reduce my Amazon purchases, is I would order things and then like not get around to returning them.
Oh, and I do that too.
Yeah. And I'm just like, I currently have a box of like brand new items that I didn't return to Amazon. And now it's like, so I'm going to donate them. But it's just like, and some of them are silly. Like, I ordered the wrong refill for my daughter's magic mixie. Like, I ordered one for one she doesn't have. And I'm like, I could have just paid a little bit more attention. Well, multiple times I ordered like two copies of a book because I would add it to my cart twice. And then I'm like, why? And so I just need to like slow down, because yeah. I think that's a lot of, that was just carelessness and not, I just need to track better, honestly.
I'm feeling like we did a lot of the same things last year, because I also, like, I ordered multiples of clothing sometimes without realizing.
Same. Like, you just add it to your cart twice and then you don't notice, especially if it's a low priced item. You're like, yeah, the total seems fine. And then it arrives. You're like, why do I have two? And you check the receipt. You're like, oh, I ordered two.
Yeah. And I did return one thing last year. I hate returning things. Actually, two things. I returned one bridesmaid dress that I wasn't going to wear. Okay. One of them, I just never got around to it. So I have a bridesmaid dress just sitting in my closet that I'm never going to wear.
Yeah.
And the third thing, the one thing I actually did return, was sports tape, which was $12. And the only reason I returned it is because Amazon came back to my house to pick it up for me.
I love when they do that. When they do that, I do return things. If they're like, take this to your nearest Purolator, I'm like, well, I guess it's being donated now.
Yeah, but then I forgot to order the correct item. So I had to go out and buy it anyways and spend double the amount. So I'm also going to pay more attention. Slow down is a good one for finances.
Yeah, like just pause. Just pause before you hit buy.
Reflect.
Yeah. Make sure it's the right number of items in your cart.
Do you feel like that is something that everyone should do at the end of the year, is look back on their finances?
I mean, ideally, I think you would do it more than once a year, like even quarterly. Like, I think I could have controlled a lot of leakage and carelessness if I had just reviewed quarterly instead of annually. So
I mean, I feel like I do it at the end of every single month. And I know that for some people, that's too much. For some, it's not enough. Mm-hmm. But I think doing it once a month is reasonable. It only takes about an hour. Like, even if you don't track your expenses for the entire month, which is what I do, at the end of the month, it takes me an hour to input them all into my spreadsheet.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
So I think it's worth it. Just like 1 hour a month dedicate to your expenses.
Yeah, I think people are surprised by how much they're spending and where, because we all have so many credit cards and different bank accounts now that like it's easy to forget about transactions on one card. Like whenever I notice I'm getting kind of spendy and a little careless, I just switch to debit and I stop putting everything on credit cards. And then I only have one thing to look at, and that really slows me down, and that's nice.
Yeah, switching to debit's a good idea. I think it's so easy to get carried away. Mm-hmm. I was just saying too, there's been tons of data that's come out lately saying that, obviously these come out every January where we're like, everyone is struggling and consumer debt is at an all-time high.
Yeah, because we bankrupted the middle class and have been doing that for the past 30 years. So it's gonna keep getting worse.
Yeah. Equifax Canada released a report last month that credit card balances hit an all-time high of $107.4 billion.
Woohoo!
And Canadian consumer debt reached $2.4 trillion.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. And so I like the idea of switching to debit.
Oh, yeah. Switching to debit makes the difference in everything, because first you can only spend what you have. And I think even that stops you, because you know how much is in your account, or like you should just look before you make a transaction. And it makes you think twice, because I do think we've really got, and I think this may be contributing to the debt levels increasing, is they've shown that there is a detachment from your money when you're using plastic instead of cash. And in the pandemic, we all went cashless, we all switched to plastic, and it is so much easier to just tap or insert and put your PIN rather than like physically take 20s out of your wallet, which is an experience that's totally lost now. So I do think switching to debit, where there's just a little bit more pain of watching the money leave your account immediately instead of when your credit card bill comes in, that might help you get your spending slower.
Yeah, it's in line with slowdown.
Yeah, slow spending is our theme of 2024. That sounds nice.
I think so. I'm also really curious how you feel, but I typically get asked a lot, like, what do you recommend for people who are in that situation where they're in a ton of debt? And maybe you don't, your outs are being an expert. So you're not going to be doing any of these journalism interviews where they ask you this question. But I always am like saying the same thing over and over again, which is like, it's not about how much you're putting away or how much you're putting towards your debt. It's about like actually just the behavior of doing it, which we talk about all the time on the podcast. But people get so upset about it. And I think it's always because like the only advice you can give someone if they're in a situation where they're struggling is advice that would have been helpful before they got into the situation. Like there isn't really anything uplifting or new that you can do with your finances when you're in debt, other than go back to the basics and pay really close attention to your finances.
100%.
And a lot of people don't like hearing that, obviously, because it's defeating and it takes so much time. Like money is something that it's a slow game. It takes years sometimes to get to a place or a position where you feel comfortable and stable. Mm-hmm. So what do you say to those people? Because I understand that it's frustrating to hear that. And I understand that there can be this feeling of hopelessness, like you're doing all that you can and you're feeling like there's nothing more you can do and you're not seeing the progress. What do you say?
Well, and I think we've talked about this on the podcast before, that I don't think there's ever a scenario where there is nothing more you can do. There's always something. I think sometimes when people are stressed and overwhelmed, their vision is just really narrow of what's available to them, because they may think, I've cut all my expenses and I've picked up a side hustle and that's it. But maybe there's something else that you need to do. Like, when was the last time you asked for a raise at work? Have you looked at applying for jobs elsewhere and increasing your income? Like, that's, in my opinion, that's the fastest way to get out of debt. Like, I personally would rather go find a job that pays me $1,000 more per month than try to cut my expenses by $1,000 and use that for debt repayment. But also, you do have to have a longer term perspective, like you said, and a vision that finances is a really slow game and it takes a long time. And I think you kind of have to get a few months of progress under your belt before you see that, because I think we have this idea, like once you make the decision to pay off your debt or start building your investment accounts, you like set everything up, you make some payments, and you want a quick win, and nothing's going to happen. It really does take 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, or 2 years. And then that's when your debts are paid off or your portfolio has thousands of dollars in it and you start to see the results. But it's just not a quick win game. And if you chase those quick fixes, you're just going to run in circles and cause more problems.
Yeah, I think that's how I feel. I did an interview this week and that was the question. And I essentially...
I'm so glad I'm not doing these
anymore. Oh my gosh. But essentially all I said was like, it doesn't really have to be like a year that you do a ton every single year, which we both know, but it is like there's literally a crisis around every corner right now. And it's causing a lot of like hopelessness for people, because whether it's like trying to find an affordable place to live or trying to find affordable groceries, we've got shrinkflation, inflation, we've got all types of flation.
All the flations.
But more than anything, it's like you still need to do the things.
You do.
Even if it's like the teeniest, tiniest amount of money, you still need to make a transfer to your savings every month. You still need to put money away for retirement every single month.
Yeah. I remember doing, like, when I had my student loan debt and stuff, if I would get like cash back on my credit card, even if it was like $5 or $6 a month, and I would transfer it over to my student loans. Like, it was that precise. It was that small. But doing that over months or years, it does actually make a difference. I'm also a fan of, and something I focus on and still do with my finances, is I will often dedicate like 1 month or one quarter to just one financial goal, rather than like doing RSP contributions, TFSA contributions, whatever, debt obligations, other things for a few hundred dollars or like $50 at a time for the entire year. I will be like, I'm only going to max out my RSP for the next three. Like, that's what I do every year. Every year I devote like the first 60 days to just RSP contributions. I don't make any contributions to my TFSA. This month I made the full deposit into my daughter's RESP. I still haven't made any contributions to my TFSA, because it's just easier for me to focus on one or two goals and say, this is the goal I'm doing for this month or this quarter. And then when it's complete, move on to something else. Because sometimes when you're doing half a dozen financial goals at once, like, you don't see progress on any of them. If you're doing an emergency fund, your retirement accounts, paying off debt, saving for your child's education, and you're putting like a little $50 or $100 into each one every single month, like, it moves so slow. It's way easier to be like, I'm only going to pay off my Visa credit card for the next 3 months, and then the balance will be gone. And you just do that. And when the credit card's paid off, you're like, okay, now I have money. I'm going to put it in my TFSA for the next 6 months. And maybe your TFSA is maxed out. And then after that, you're like, okay, I'm going to put money in my kid's RESP for the end of the year. And then you get to the end of the year, you've had these like big wins along the way. All your goals are complete. And I think that makes your progress easier, because you're maxing out, you're doing something in full. And I think that's actually an easier method. And that's what I've been doing for years. So I think that's an approach that can help quite a bit.
I love that one. I feel like that's how you repay debt. So why wouldn't you do the same with your savings goals?
Yeah, it's so much easier. Like, I love, like, even the stress of knowing, because I used to, and even in past years, I was doing $500 a month to my daughter's RESP until I hit the $2,500, which granted still only took like 5 months. It was half the year that was front loading it. But just doing it all this month in January and being done, and I'm like, oh my God, I don't have to do $500 a month. I feel like I have an extra $500 a month in my budget, which is going to go to my new mortgage payment. Yay. But it makes a big difference. And just knowing her account's taken care of, and I don't, like, it's off my plate. I crossed it off on the first day of this year. And that's just a really good feeling.
We have to celebrate that. That's a huge win.
Woohoo!
Snap.
My child's richer than me.
Well, I think what it comes down to for me is I just realized, like, I've been focusing so much on personal habits, like reading all the time and like drinking water and all of
that
kind of stuff.
You have been so diligent. You're an inspiration to us all. I have 4 books half read right now, and I started them all in 2023 and didn't finish them. I could have done so well. I played Nintendo instead.
That's fair. But I mean, like, I think when I was looking at, I realized that that is how I became financially successful and stable. Mm-hmm. It's not like I didn't become good with money when I started earning more. I became good with money when I was in the most debt I've ever been in. But because I was so in tune with what I was doing, and I was so focused on the little things that were moving the needle, that when I did come into money, or when I did come into a place where there was more to go around, that's why I stayed successful. Because you'll meet people who are making significant amounts of money that don't have any of that security. And it's because they don't have those behaviors in place. So you can be good at money with nothing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Scarcity might be the best teacher of all.
Yeah. And then when you do come into a place where you're financially secure, because it will happen if you keep going down that path of sticking with everything you're supposed to do, it will feel more reasonable and manageable when you get there.
Yeah, that's true. I think I prioritize finances the way I do because I do remember what it was like to have nothing. And it feels, yeah, really good to put money in my daughter's RESP and be all responsible now, because I remember how big the payoff was when it was so much harder to do. And now those habits are so ingrained. It's now been like 15 years of caring about my finances, and all the good habits were learned when I had less, and they carry over even when you can relax, but your financial security is so much more.
Yeah. Even if you get $1,000 or more in income and you negotiate a higher raise, if you don't know what to do with that when it comes, it's really hard to get ahead.
You don't get ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. So lessons learned. This is all about slow today.
I love the theme. I love a slow start to 2024, especially because I feel like this will be a very big, aggressive year for me. And so it kind of feels nice to ease into it. Based on my calendar, it's not, this is the last day of easing.
Yeah, me too. I thought that's the problem is in December, I was like, I'm just grateful that I get the opportunity to go back to school and to try being self-employed. And so I was like, that's the perfect word. I'm just grateful that I have these opportunities. And then,
I love that you're doing them together at the same time.
Yeah, right? Then yesterday I sat through my orientation for the master's program and I was like, I can't be grateful this year. I actually have to do work. A lot of work. And I started crying. And then I was like, I need to change my word. Like, I can't just sit here and let this be my word for this year. And I think I'm switching it to scrappy and tenacious.
I like that, but I don't know. I think grateful was good too. Do you want to tell people what you're doing for those that don't know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think everyone knows now that I quit my job.
I don't think everyone knows what you're studying or what you're back in school for, though.
Right. Okay. So I quit my job and I start school on Monday, so January 8th, for my master's in counseling psychology.
It's so big and grown up. You're such a grown up.
And so in 2.5 years, when we're still running our podcast and we're the number one on the charts everywhere, North America, internationally, I'll be a financial therapist.
And then you will just be giving me financial therapy on the podcast.
For free. But yeah, so that's really exciting. That's why it's hard to know what the next year is going to be like for me.
I love it, though, because I still feel like maybe the origin of this was the Trauma of Money course that we took together. And I remember I enrolled in that. And then I just messaged you and I was like, Alyssa, this is really good. You should try to get in. And you signed up and did the course with me and it changed your life. Like
it did.
It impacted how I see money. And I feel like I do have a better approach to it and a healthier relationship with money. And I try to also put that through my content. And for anyone that's not familiar with Trauma of Money, we actually interviewed the creator Chantel for our second episode of season one. And you can check her out on social media at Trauma of Money. And yeah, Alyssa, you took the course and now you're becoming a financial therapist. This is like 2 years ago. When did we do that? 2021? Three years ago?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It was so funny because yesterday someone asked you in your Ask Me Anything, like, who inspires you? And you tagged me. And I was like,
you did.
That's
so
cute.
But it's so true.
But you're my number one. You inspired me to quit my job. You inspired me to take that course. You wrote a recommendation letter for me to get into my master's, so I wouldn't even be in the program without you.
Alyssa, don't make me cry on the podcast.
And I don't know. I just feel like I wouldn't be nearly as successful as I am without you. So I appreciate you. And I'm really, every week we get to chat and I'm sorry that everyone has to listen to our
just love each other. But I do think back to also the origin of our friendship, because how it started is you read my blog and I think you just reached out randomly and wanted to meet up for coffee.
Yes.
And look at the friendship and the impact it's had on both of our lives, because I'm working on a really big project this year that I'm not ready to share on the podcast yet, but I will later this year. And I came into it because just watching the growth that you did last year and seeing you quit your job and apply to your master's program, it was so inspirational and actually made me feel so stagnant, where I'm like, not that I was underachieving, but that I was so jealous of the passion that you had for something. And I just wanted to feel that again. So I went out looking and I found something, and now I'm in that. And I'm like, I don't think I'd be doing this if it wasn't for Alyssa. And
I'm so excited for you.
I know, it's so fun. But having this conversation and like talking about this, especially as we're going into the new year and people are feeling stuck, like, you have little moments in your life that can completely change the trajectory of your entire life. And you kind of don't know what those are. Cause for us, it really was like a coffee, cause you liked my blog in like 2012 or 2014 or something. And look at the relationship and the career growth that that spurred. And so I would say to other people too, like, just go out and have those little moments, because you don't know which ones will inspire you and really change your life. So if things feel stuck, the only way forward is movement. So you have to go do something, and it doesn't have to be a big thing. It can be really small, because sometimes a coffee turns into a big career change.
And yeah, I agree. I feel like it's the relationships in your life that actually do impact your finances more than you realize.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Like, I wouldn't say that we're competitive with each other, because there's no animosity or anything like that. But I think you need people in your life that are striving for bigger and better things, because then you want to do the same.
100%. Yeah.
There doesn't need to be like, I want everything that that person has, but it's the feelings. If someone's feeling something that you want to feel.
Yes, exactly.
It's money feels.
It's money feels. Look at you.
This is like the most emotional entry into the new year, but I think that's like what January is about, to be honest.
It is. Like, I know some people try kind of to downplay it, or they don't like it to be a brand new start, but I've always liked the new year to feel like reflective on the past year and a start of a new one. I start my reflections in like November, because that's when my birthday is. And I can really reflect on like the last year of my life. And then I kind of spend December planning the next one. And so January always feels like a fresh start to me. And honestly, I think it's nice, because usually the weather isn't that good. It's really dark. So it feels really great to have something big to look forward to for the rest of the year. And I think, and this isn't to say you can't have a new start anytime. I think like every day is the next day of the rest of your life. So you can start anytime, but it is just a nice time to do it.
Yeah. I'm hoping that most of the people who are listening do have like a few financial goals or habits that they want to track this year. I think if you don't, it might be something good to consider, because you, like we said, it doesn't have to be anything significant, but if you're struggling to get by, or you're just making ends meet, or you're in a lot of debt, think about that. It's like a 1% change.
Yes.
Every single day, instead of trying to make like one big change in 1 year, just do 1% every single day.
Or 1% a week. Let's not stress anyone out.
And like 1% of money too, like, is not very much. So if you had a savings goal, and you were like, I'm going to put 1% away every single month this year, that can still work. That's enough.
Yeah, that's what I encourage people to start with too, because we can have these great ambitions like, oh, I'm going to save 10% of my income this year. Or I'm going to put 15% of my income towards debt or something like that. But sometimes it's easier. If you're going from zero, you really should just start with 1% or 2%. Then once it's a habit, you can build onto it. Because really, like, our relationship with money does work a lot like a muscle. You kind of have to train it, and then it becomes your default. But it's really hard to just jump into it and be like, because also, even though I said it is a brand new start, we're not brand new people in the new year. Like, you're still yourself, but it is a chance to cultivate some new habits, but you can't totally change everything overnight. And I think it's good to be reasonable with expectations as well.
Yeah. Okay. Well, can I ask what your financial goals are for this year? I think you maybe shared them, but I don't actually know.
I did share them on Instagram, and now I can't remember, because they weren't very concrete. Like, the only thing I really care about is putting $7,000 in my TFSA for this year, and then putting back $20,000. This is part of my 3-year plan, because I had taken $60,000 out of my TFSA for my down payment.
Yes.
I'm putting $20,000 back over 3 years. $20,000 per year over 3 years. That one, I'm probably going to max out my RRSP maybe. I am not setting any income goals this year, and I'm not really setting any net worth goals, because it's not motivating to me anymore. And I think
that's fair.
Sounds kind of weird. And I am saying this from a position of privilege and a higher income, that it doesn't matter at this point, and that's not something that I want to drive me. It just doesn't have the same pull that it did in my 20s, and I think even my early 30s. At this point, I feel like I accomplished what I wanted. I hit fire, which is amazing, and this is what I set out to do. It's done. I don't want to focus on it anymore. Actually, I think if this wasn't my job, I probably wouldn't think about money at all. I kind of want to break from it sometimes, because yeah. I feel like now I've been so hyper-focused on money for so many years. A lot of it was from money trauma. And having worked through all that and gotten to a position of security, sometimes I'm like, I wish I didn't have to think about this. So
you don't have to be shy about saying that. It's not a bad thing.
I feel bad saying it, though, on a money podcast when I'm a financial influencer, where I'm like, I really don't want to think about money anymore. But it's been such a focus for so long, and there is a little bit of exhaustion to that. And I've been working on other things to focus on instead. I went on a big credit card and hotel points thing. That's fun for me. So I can still track numbers that aren't attached to my work. And now I'm very into tennis. As you know, I'm hyper focused on my tennis rating, because that gives me something to strive for and build on my skills every single week and see progress that, again, isn't related to money. Same with my dog training. I love having a dog, because every day I can just teach her things. There's progress that we're building on. It's so satisfying. It's so rewarding. And it's not related to money. So actually, some contrarian advice I would give to people on this too is, like, don't make all your goals financial. Because I used to do that in my 20s. I don't even think I had goals that weren't related to money, because everything was tied up into savings and debt repayment and income and my business goals and things. Like, I don't think I thought of anything except for money. And now when I look back, that's like really sad.
Yeah.
And so now I've really gone out of my way to set goals that are not finance related and to have hobbies that are not finance related. And it's been so fulfilling and good for me that I would encourage people, no matter what your financial situation, and I feel like a lot of people that listen to us are also obsessive about their money, like, consider having some things that you can track and develop that are not money.
I think that's why we're all here, though. Like, aren't we all wanting to get to the point where we don't want to think about money because we don't need to anymore?
Yeah, I think that's the ultimate goal. But it turns out that there isn't a number that happens at. It is something that you have to consciously cultivate. And I personally wish I had known that 5 or 10 years ago and had worked on it then, because I would have been less underwhelmed at the arrival
right
now. And it kind of sucks to get your finances organized into a place of, like, the security you dreamed of and realize it didn't give you all the fulfillment that you wanted. And that fulfillment that you want actually comes from other things. And you can have those so much earlier. Like, you can have those so much earlier in your life. There are things you can enjoy even if you're in debt, even if your retirement isn't taken care of, even if you're not earning the amount that you want. There's a whole big world out there and lots of things in life that you can enjoy right now. You don't have to wait for your finances to be in order to play tennis and get a dog.
No, please do those things. I've been dying for this day. Like, I've been waiting for you to find these hobbies. We've been talking about it for over a year.
I know. I was like, I should do something with my time besides make spreadsheets.
Now when we ask what's going on, you won't just say, oh, I just get coffees and go grab a pastry.
I still do that, but with a dog, no.
Yeah, exactly. There's something else going on.
What about you? Did you set financial goals for the year?
So I set a bunch of, like, individual categorized goals.
Okay.
Because, you know, we can't do anything simply. But I have, like, my personal goals and I have business goals. But my personal finance goals are not very big this year because I was struggling.
You're in school. Yeah.
I'm in school. That's literally, yesterday after the orientation, I added school as a category and I put one bullet point and it says pass.
It wasn't a category before.
No, I forgot. That's why I'm overwhelmed. So anyways, my goals for my money this year, I want to invest $15,000 this year.
That's a lot. Good for you.
Fingers crossed.
Especially while you're a student.
Yeah, my second goal is pay for school.
Oh,
is a big one.
And still invest. Okay. Very yes. pricey.
And then if I have any money left after paying for my master's, I would love to get laser eye surgery.
Oh, you're going to do it, huh?
I want to. So I'm going to start saving for it when I can. It doesn't have to be this year because I obviously am going to be paying a lot of money.
And need your eyes.
And I need, yes, I need my vision this year.
How long is the healing from LASIK?
It's only a few days, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it doesn't, it's not a big,
to get it on like a Friday and be ready for the next week. I'm 100%. So afraid of it. People ask me that every time I get new glasses. People are like, have you considered LASIK? And I'm like, nope, not for my eyes.
I can't take it anymore. And I, with little kids, I keep getting eye infections and then I can't wear contacts. And it just doesn't work for me as a sports person.
Oh, fair. Yeah.
I need to wear contacts every single day. So anyways, these are my personal finance goals. Essentially for me this year, it's just like get by. Like I'm not too worried if I don't hit my investment goal this year because not every year is going to be that way.
Yes. And thank you for saying that because I feel like we get it. You probably get these same DMs too. Like I get DMs from people that are like, I'm on maternity leave and stressed out about maxing out my TFSA. And I'm like, don't, just like chill and yeah. enjoy your baby. Because not every single year of your life has to be one of financial achievement. Like we can have other focuses at different times, depending what season you're in of your life.
Yeah. And I think it's a lot of little stuff for me too. Like just, I just want to feel good. I just want to make small changes around the house. I think last year was so much about big and better and more that this year I want it to be completely the opposite.
Oh, I love that. That sounds nice.
We learned so much last year about consumption mm-hmm. on this podcast.
We did. We can't recover from those episodes.
No.
It ruined our shopping for life.
Yeah. And so that is one of the only real goal that I want to see if I can stick to is I don't want to buy a single new item of clothing in 2024.
That is so ambitious.
It is.
I think you can do it, but I'm overwhelmed by that goal.
I kind of feel overwhelmed too, but there's nothing new I need. All of my clothes fit. I have like enough of a variety. I don't need anything new. None of my clothes are worn out right now. There just doesn't seem to be it's not a necessity at all. And it doesn't really bring me joy. Like buying new clothes never has brought me joy. So I don't understand why I continue to do it.
Oh, buying new sweatshirts brings me so much joy.
I like winning a free shirt at a sports tournament. Those ones bring me joy. But otherwise, I just don't find that it brings me joy. And now I just feel like I have so much to learn about the volume of clothing that I've consumed in my life. So I just, if I need anything throughout the year, I will rent.
Okay.
If there's an event or a function where I feel like I need something new, I'm going to try renting clothes or I'll borrow from someone in my life.
Yeah.
And if it's like something that's more of a basic that I want to replace, if something were to happen, I think I would have to thrift it.
Okay. I think that's reasonable.
I feel like those are two good and realistic replacements.
I think that sounds good.
So everyone now knows, 10,000 of you. And so now I have to do it.
See, that's why I don't set goals because I don't want to be held accountable on the internet because people will be like, didn't you say it? I'm like, oh, no. I never said that.
Well, I am saying it because it truly, like, I was disgusted with myself when I found out how much I spent on clothing last year.
Do you buy that much?
I usually don't, but last year I spent almost $5,000 on clothing, which is, like, excessive for me. I have never done that.
Oh.
And I did have two weddings, and so, like, obviously there's events and things that you need to buy outfits for.
Yeah.
But again, I'm just like, it's not actually a need. There were other options that I didn't even consider. And so again, it's that slow down, make the responsible choice instead of just doing whatever is easiest.
Yeah. I can't think of anything that I really need clothing wise right now, but I like buying clothes, so I'm not going to.
That's okay. You can surprise us with your new outfit purchases.
I am changing to, ever since we did that fast fashion episode and you showed me that website where you can look up how eco-friendly a clothing manufacturer is or clothing brand, now I'm using that to be a lot more intentional with my purchases. And I'm really sad that I've had to say goodbye to like some of my brands that I really like and was so disappointed to learn that they were on there.
I know.
I'm being more careful and intentional of what I buy. I'm just really happy that Gucci fared pretty well. Like their score was good. So I'm okay.
Okay, good. Yeah, I think like that's a really good change to make.
Mm-hmm. And Reformation, I love them. So no guilt, yeah. Reformation good. Shopping.
I like it. That was one of my only other ones that would be like more specific and just donating more, which we've talked about as well. Mm-hmm. I just want to be, I know how much I gifted last year. So now I want to try and increase that.
That's awesome. Yeah. This is going to be a big donation year for me too. And I'm excited and planning it out. We might have to talk more about it, but I'm trying to because all the charities want their like, they prefer recurring contributions right. Where I wanted to do like big gifts. So I'm still trying to figure out the order, but that's a fun one. Planning charitable giving is like very, very fun.
Yeah. I think if you are struggling to spend on yourself too, that's a good place to start.
Because
yes. It still is spending on you. It brings you joy. It makes you feel good.
The helper's high.
Yeah. So if you feel guilty or bad for spending money on yourself, which is completely something we all need to work on, but that's start there. Who are you giving to?
Who am I? Is that a question for me?
Oh, no. Just asking people? but you can share if you want.
I was like, who am I giving to? I'm still primarily doing the food bank and the animal rescue where I got all my animals from because I really no more animals from them. I can only support them financially. I cannot take any more animals home, which is what I said at the event I went to as a donor and came back with a puppy. But this time, none.
Okay, that's your one thing you're holding yourself accountable to. No new yes. animals in 2024.
And I was caught at a vulnerable moment by the Canadian National Institute for the Blind. They were doing fundraising for Seeing Eye Dogs
aww.
The week that I got my dog. So I immediately signed up as a donor for them. And so that's kind of a fun one. I'm just really heavy on the animal charities lately.
That's good. It's something you're passionate about.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, do we need to say anything else about 2024?
I want people to feel hopeful and optimistic because this is a fresh start. And to get good with your finances, you can start really small. And sometimes the best thing for your finances is coffee with someone new.
Yes.
It will totally
everybody
change your
life. Everybody go for coffee with a new friend.
Yeah. Change your life 10 years later. And I think I don't want to make any predictions for the market or the economy, but I do want to hope that the worst is behind us. Like there's no way to make any predictions now because every year is just full of unprecedented events. I don't want to say yes. anything and be insanely wrong because something completely unexpected happened. But we had a really good stock market year last year. I'm hoping that bull trend continues. I think rates will stabilize so people don't have to panic that they're going to keep tripling like they yeah. were before. So, and inflation has slowed down. So I do think the worst is behind us and maybe we can have some stability. Like I'm crossing my finger. Again, I can't predict it because as soon as
no
we
one
do.
Can.
Oh my God. And who knows? Who knows what's lurking there? But I'm optimistic for 2024 and I hope other people can feel that too.
Yeah. I think like one week at a time.
One week at a time.
There's so much you can do in one week. And then the new week comes and you can start fresh again. Every week is a start, is a fresh start.
Every week is a new year.
No, I agree. I think like, I do think that this year is going to be a little bit more stable as far as the economy goes. But I also will not be making any predictions. Although I do love those people who make absurd celebrity predictions for the
oh,
year
yeah.
and then come back and tell us which ones were
and
true.
Then they can be like trolled so hard at the end because They were so bad. I'm still laughing, like, because I would get so many DMs about stupid Michael Burry and his short against the US stock market. People were like, what do you think of this? Should I pull my money? He's betting against it. And he was right that one time. I'm like, don't listen to this guy. And he was dead wrong and lost over $1 billion. And I'm like, everybody's wrong. Don't make predictions.
Yeah, don't trust anybody who's trying to predict something that hasn't happened yet.
Yes.
It's a really good money rule.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Money Feels. You can subscribe to our podcast anywhere you listen. And if you like this episode, you can leave us a review. We also have a Patreon where you get access to our close friends list on Instagram, bonus episodes, and your say on what we chat about this season. See you next week for another episode. We're so happy to be back.
You can follow us on Instagram @MixedUpMoney for me, @BridgieCasey for Bridget, and @MoneyFeels Podcast. And we'll see you next time.